Welcome one and all to another Dantastic Monday here at The Damage Report with me, John Derola, and Dan Evans. Dan, how's it going?
Good to be with you. Good to be one day before the election. I'm very excited. I'm very terrified. I'm feeling all of the feelings, but I feel happy to be here.
I'm happy that you're here, and I like the way that you said that, because look, I'm also worried about the midterms. I'm worried about what tomorrow is going to be like. I'm worried about what implications it'll have. But let's remember, we have each other, okay? And we will survive. We might survive with fewer rights than we had going into this week, but we're going to be okay. We're going to try to make this a thing that can be born for you all, both in giving the information you need, but also trying to have a little bit of fun with it. We're going to be doing both of those actually on today's show, and we will get through this. There will be another day. There will, more importantly, be future elections that maybe the Democrats won't mangle as much. So there are things to look forward to. So bear all of that in mind. And also bear in mind that we've got some amazing stories to talk about on today's show. Not only we're gonna try to catch up with all of the insanity up to and including the last 10 minutes that's happening on Twitter. We're gonna have a little bit of an update on World War Trump DeSantis. First shots fired by Donald Trump. We're gonna see how effective they actually are. The utter self-imposed degradation of Tulsi Gabbard reaches an even more ridiculous level. That'll be fun. And we've got Nazis and we've got racists, and we also have our picks. So this was sort of Dan's idea last week. We're gonna be going through some of those high profile races for the midterms, and we're gonna be going on the record what we actually think is gonna happen. And so you can evaluate as the races get finalized whether us bozos know what we're talking about or not. Okay, so that's gonna be a lot of fun, and I can't wait to see you, Dan, what your picks actually are.
We'll see truly how much John coasts on his producers after this prediction round, for sure.
Look, so I'll explain my philosophy
I tease.
For my picks. But yet, no, I like to coast. Anyway, with all that said, please hit the like button if you haven't already, so the people know we're live and they can join in on the fun. And if you want to send us any tweets or comments or super chats or anything like that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Dan, are you ready to start the show?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Okay, well, I like Dan, so I want Dan to have a little bit of fun. So we're gonna start off with a little bit of fun. Let's intro this right though with our little bumper. So normally we come back from the weekend and we choose a Monday menace, someone who has menaced us through the course of the weekend. But in this case, it's someone who's kind of menacing himself. And so just take a look.
So it is closing time in these midterm elections. The fight is on, and there is no closer in American politics like Big Daddy Don.
Oh, God. I don't like it, Dan. I know that Matt Gaetz is not like a man or a man with principles or a man with self-respect, but that is just so deeply embarrassing. Not just the saying the Big Daddy Don, but the way that he sort of like steps back and he's like happy with himself. What do you make of that?
Freud would run a clinic in 2022. That's what I make about it. I mean, you put aside the allegations that Matt Gaetz has got on, and then juxtapose that with Big Daddy Donald. You take aside the whole how Matt Gaetz and Donald Trump, you know, Donald Trump has this position in the Republican Party of being the leader, how everyone follows his lead, and then juxtapose that with Matt Gaetz saying Daddy Donald Trump. There's a lot to dig into there. There's a lot going on psychologically, definitely on the scandalous versus Trump ticket. I think Matt Gaetz has picked his side for sure.
Yeah, bear in mind, he could have gone and hung out with DeSantis. He chose to go with Trump. I don't think anyone's shocked by that. And that's fine, but like, why? I'm gonna say, why do they need to do this? But I already know why they need to do this. You know why they need to do this. Why does Matt Gaetz have to call Trump daddy? Why is that a sentence that I have to say on the news? Why did Congressman Gaetz call Trump daddy? You know why he called Trump daddy. You know why Marjorie Greene stood on stage a year ago with a cardboard cut out of Trump and literally groped its cardboard crotch. You know why they had to do this. It's not because Marjorie Greene actually wants to have sex with Donald Trump. And it's not because I hope Matt Gaetz really thinks of Trump as his daddy and just likes that. It's because there's nothing to their party. There's just nothing left except please cast your divine orange light on me. Please just say that I'm good, because if you do that, then I'll get elected. If you turn against me, that's it. And all of them are just constantly afraid. And I don't just mean in the normal way that conservatives are constantly afraid of literally everything around them. They're just constantly afraid of Donald Trump, the like frenetic, ephemeral person that he is, turning against them, as he so often perhaps inevitably does for everyone else that has shown him loyalty. It's just so embarrassing. And Dan, I know that like our side has never had power. Our politicians have never run for, like, never gotten to be the president or whatever. I just hope that if we do ever rise, if we ever have that big figure that actually can get it across the finish line, I hope that we never descend to these pathetic depths. That's just my hope for the left.
Oh, based on my experience in organizing on the left, there'll be no possible way there isn't a subcommittee meeting and a hearing and another meeting before any of that kind of sycophantic stuff happens. Like, listen, the left for like doesn't really do idol worship. The closest thing you got to that was Bernie Sanders. And even while he was running and doing well, there was discourse island constantly takes upon takes about his, what is he doing things right, even from the left, let alone what was coming from the right and everything else. So like the right wing is really good at going, this is our guy, this is our person who will do our things for us. We don't care about his character, even if it contradicts with our policies, because we're devoid of policies. We just want to get elected and have power and do what we want to. The left in this country is just very much not like that. And the left in a lot of places is just very much not like that, even though the right will claim that. It's always projection. It's what they always do.
We have a weaponized Department of Justice and a weaponized FBI, including, of course, the very famous raid on Mar-a-Lago and the document hoax case, which violated my Fourth Amendment rights and something that has never been done to another president. No other president's ever done this. Presidents leave, they take things, they take documents, they take things, they read them. Nobody else has ever gone through this. This is a charade.
Okay, so again, we knew that he stole the documents. We knew that he knew that it was theft when he did it. We know every layer of this, you know, floor to ceiling. But like, isn't he not supposed to just say that he did it? I know he's not trying to convince us or whatever, but like in theory, judges are watching and lawyers and special masters and all that. Isn't he supposed to at least pretend in public that he didn't knowingly commit a crime? Now he's not just admitting it, he's sort of bragging about it, knowing that he's sitting in front of a camera. Dan, what do you think?
John, it's almost as though Donald Trump is acting as though he's above the law. And even though all of those things you just said are true, that judges are watching, that his legal team at one point was saying, no, Donald, we're gonna break our backs trying to make a case for saying that you stealing documents that were classified out of the White House after you were being president was actually a good thing. And that was totally something you were able to do because you could just declassify them. That was gonna be our case. Can you please stop going out there with your, you know, shadow legal team by saying, by the way, I did it and it is no problem with doing it. All presidents do this and no one should get in my way. Like, this is a very, this is very serious, but this is shows yet again that this is a person who believes that he is above the law. Maybe, just maybe, fringe theory here. I know, like radical leftists, whatever. We shouldn't elect the guy who thinks he's above the law to be the president of the United States. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, look, nobody wants America to have to like lock up its presidents or whatever, but like, maybe it would set a good precedent. Maybe it would send a good signal to future politicians that you're not actually able to do literally anything you want. It's actually kind of amazing that more of our recent presidents haven't done more obvious crimes. They've all committed crimes. Literally every one of them has broken the law. But it's kind of amazing they haven't done more, considering how much work we've all done to assure them that they're never gonna get in trouble for literally anything. I guess we've kind of gotten lucky at this point. But Trump is He's doing victory laps, and not just one or two. That was at one of his rallies. I didn't even clip out. He did it again, like in the last couple of days. He's just now openly talking about the documents on a daily basis because he cares more about the applause line than he does about the potential legal jeopardy. Probably because the applause line is guaranteed and the jeopardy is at best hypothetical and probably not gonna come. But anyway, today's supposed to be about fun. Tomorrow is gonna be dark and serious and probably depressing, but today is supposed to be about fun. So can we have a little bit of fun, America? Can we launch into this video?
It's Trump at 71, Ron DeSanctimonious at 10%, Mike Pence at 7. Oh, Mike's doing better than I thought.
Oh God, shots fired at Ron DeSantis. Donald Trump has finally come out with it. The big nickname, the insult, the demeaning little smear that's gonna take down Ron DeSantis. Sorry, Ron DeSanctimonious. And I have to say, after hearing that, I immediately thought I might be overestimating Trump. I might have to change my view of the coming clash between them because that's not very good, Dan. What do you think?
Listen, Trump was definitely the funniest president we've had in American history. That's a low bar. All right. Like, so this is definitely, and you know, Donald Trump has been known to workshop these kind of things. I think he's been better in some cases, but some of these nicknames have definitely been worse. This is probably on the low bar of the scale for sure. I'm definitely gonna use this as an arbitrary scale at some point to review music on my podcast. But I was actually in my shower this morning. I was thinking, you know, Gavin Newsom has wanted to run for office since he's been a zygote. So what's his nickname gonna be? Is it gonna be Greasy Gavin? I think you could do so much more with G than you can with DeSantis. But I think Ron DeScandalous is something that I'm stealing from one of my friends. Like, there's a lot of gray area. There's a lot of room you have to work with. I think Sanctimonious is just, and forgive me for being a little bit too condescending here. Oh no, Dan from the internet being condescending. But I think sanctimonious is just too big of a word for a lot of Trump's base right now. I think it's just,
yeah,
it's
too big
clunky
for Trump. It's definitely too big for at least some of his base. Like, it's too much for me. That's the best you've got? Like, apparently Emma's been going with ripoff Ronnie. That's not bad. Some people are saying sad ass. I don't know about that, but how about like wrong DeSantis? That's dumb. That's childish. Go with wrong. And that way, every time you think of Ron DeSantis, you think, yeah, but isn't he kind of wrong? And honestly, considering how much of a satanic panic we're in, call him Ron DeSatan. Like, I know that that's kind of ridiculous, but that's the level of your party at this point.
I mean, Donald Trump, you have him on video with his son trying to trying to read him Donald Trump books. Like, he's trying to be your guy forever. You just call him little baby Ron. Just demean him like you would Eric Trump. Like, try that for a framework. I think that's an easier way to go down, or even Don Jr., something like that, because you have on, like, again, everyone in the party has bent the knee to Donald Trump now. So you have them all on 4K Ultra HD video doing all this stuff. I think you should start to work that into the material. Why am I giving Donald Trump free advice? Let them fight. Yeah. That is always my philosophy. Let them fight.
Brett is saying Ron DePant Piss. No, but that's how stupid it needs to be. Honestly, little baby Ron, that's stupid. There, that's a winner for you. Ronna DeSantis, do you get it? Because now he's a girl. That's the sort of thing that his base actually wants. DeSanctimonious just isn't great. And look, like, I feel like you. Good. If it's super weak, then they'll drag out this fight and all of us can watch and it'll be great. But here's the thing that makes it even more embarrassing for Donald Trump, who I don't think is as talented as a lot of his supporters think, but he at least has come up with names that have stuck, like Lil Marco and Lion Ted and Low Energy Jeb, those sorts of things. Apparently, he's been privately testing nicknames for DeSantis with his friends and advisors, including that one, and that's the one that he went with. This is the product of like product testing of like test groups, and that's what you've got. And apparently, he might have gotten it from Roger Stone, who's been calling him Ron DeSanctimonious, like on Truth Social. This is Donald Trump, who like his main product is nicknames, and Roger Stone, who's supposed to be this like vicious political hitman, and they've come up with DeSanctimonious. I just don't get that. Now look, They've gotten a little bit of an assist in the last couple of days in that Ron DeSantis did come out with a new ad that invokes God 10 times in a minute and a half and implies that Donald Trump created Ron DeSantis to be a fighter. That is sanctimonious. That doesn't make it a good nickname though. And already, even as weak and as bad of a nickname as that is, some in the right wing are not responding well to it. Piers Morgan says bizarre decision for him to mock DeSantis right before the midterms. I think it's the most sensical decision. He doesn't want Ron DeSantis to be popular. He'd like him to win, but he'd also probably be perfectly happy with him losing. Matt Walsh says DeSantis is an extremely effective conservative governor who has had real policy wins and real cultural wins. Trump isn't gonna be able to take this one down with a dumb nickname. He better have more than that up his sleeve. I kind of agree. Also, nice job launching your public attack against the most popular conservative governor in America 3 days before the midterms when we're all supposed to be showing a united front. I don't know what Matt Walsh has said about the 2024 primary or whatever, but I would assume that he wants you to believe right now that he's a supporter of Donald Trump, because if not, he'll lose his audience. But that sure seems like a guy desperate to switch over to Ron DeSantis. I don't know, like the Kurt Schlichter, who wrote a book defending Trump in 2020, is saying he needs to back off of this, stop doing it. But this is, do they not know what the primary is gonna be between those two? Do they think it's gonna be wrong DeSantis and Donald Trump like coming up with different like tax plans that they then debate in public? Or this is what the thing is gonna be, Dan? I feel like they haven't been paying attention the last few years.
It's gonna be lower than last time when candidates' wives got involved, right? Mostly by Trump badmouthing them. Like, it's going to get worse than that, because it's not only going to get personal, it's not only going to, I mean, at least from my personal enjoyment, involve all the times that every single one of these candidates has groveled to Donald Trump over the past 5 to 7 years, but it's also going to drag minorities, people of color, marginalized communities, all the supposed culture wars that Matt Walsh is talking about. It's gonna also add to the negative space that's happening in the United States right now, where all these communities are under enhanced threat of violence. So it's gonna be bad in that way, but I don't get why people expect anything different, because, well, gee, it's not like any of these candidates haven't run elections before. Like, Trump literally ran an election. He's been running for president since he effectively got lost. He hasn't even admitted that yet, so, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, and on the other side, wrong DeSantis, I'm gonna make that stick, has been running for like decades. He's wanted to be president. In fact, we're not gonna be able to fit in the show today, but we do have this stuff, reports from students of his from back when he taught at this private school. And there is some, like, if Trump wants to take him down, the sanctimonious thing isn't the right way to go. There's some stuff with him hanging out socially with students that, considering what their base says they care about, could be really devastating. We'll have that for you tomorrow. Bridget's gonna be joining us for the show. For now though, we do have to go to our first break. When we come back, we're gonna be catching up on all of what's happening on Twitter in the immediate lead up to the midterm elections, including Elon Musk weighing in on the midterms, all that and more after this. Okay, so tomorrow is gonna be our crazy long day, and already I'm seeing comments saying John looks tired. Well, then we're doomed. It was daylight savings time though. That's always rough for everybody. It takes me a while to.
I did election coverage with you many a night, John, and you are a trooper. You will keep going. You're a veteran, and I demand the audience give you a little more respect on John's name right now.
Give me the respect that I weirdly have him backing me up and thinking that I do.
That usually does not happen. I'm usually playing bus nuts with John any point possible. So take that one seriously.
Yeah, not in the midterms week. Nobody can take it on the midterms week. Anyway, with that said, okay, everyone, when is John starring in Greece? See, that's what I'm normally getting. That's why I'll take the Chris Evans thing. Anyway, with that said, why don't we jump into our big social media catch up, starting with this topic. Verification, which isn't verification anymore, is the big focus on monetization for Twitter. And it actually appeared to roll out earlier than initially planned, with this message going out saying that starting today, that's as of the weekend, the new Twitter Blue is out, including the blue check mark. Your account will get a blue check mark just like the celebrities, companies, and politicians you already follow. Well, not just like it. They had to actually provide documentation proving that that's who they are. That's the whole point of the check mark. It's a safety feature, so those people don't get impersonated and you can actually trust that who you're talking to is who they say they are. It doesn't have that anymore. It's not gonna verify you. Oh, also, it doesn't work. They immediately discovered that people were not getting the blue check mark. A lot of Elon Musk fans were tweeting out that they purchased it, but they see no check mark. And honestly, I understand why they're mad. If you're paying $8 for a tiny little blue JPEG, then you probably deserve to get it at that point, but it didn't. And turns out it was broken, the process. They couldn't get it working in time, maybe because they fired half of their employees over the last week. And so now they've backtracked and said that the paid verification plan, which again is not verification, it's a blue check plan, will not be coming out until after the midterms, which is for the best. The idea that you would give people this image, which has been associated popularly with knowing that it's the person they say they are, but it won't anymore, the day before an election was always a bad idea. Thankfully, we at least don't have that to worry about, Dan.
I know I want to keep my comments quick for this segment because there's a lot to get through. I will just say one thing that Elon Musk will never point out is that this is what the left said, is that like, hey, you're going to have this verification issue. Hey, this is going to be a problem. Hey, you're going to haphazardly fire half of your employees. Twitter's not going to function properly. Meanwhile, the right was going, yeah, give everyone blue check marks. Yeah, trigger the blue check marks. Yeah. We're watching how that happens, but Elon's never going to make the smart decision because he's a supposed genius. And he's never going to look back and go, these people are misleading me and these people hate me, but they're right. Maybe I should reevaluate my opinions. That's never going to happen. More on that as John will explain and continue here.
100%. By the way, I'm not the only one who seems to have decided that firing all of your engineers might not be the best idea. Apparently, they've been reaching out to people that they just fired to come back.
Oops.
That oopsie doopsie. And honestly, like, I guess some of those employees are in a tough spot. It sucks to lose your job. Maybe some of them will come back, but I can't imagine what morale is gonna be like when you're informed via email that your job is gone and now they want you to come back, but they clearly don't want you to be there. That's a weird position to be in. Anyway, by the way, my final thoughts on the whole verification thing. I would be fine with this if they just did not call it verification and didn't make it the blue check mark. Let's be very clear. All of the right wingers who say that the blue check mark is elitist and that's why they don't like it, that's the only reason Elon Musk is doing this, is because he knows some of those people very much do think it's elitist, but would like to be a part of that elite, except that it's just an image. Honestly, if they just made it a blue badge or something, there'd be nothing wrong with that. It's tying it in with a safety mechanism that's so insidious. Wanting to get as a part of your, you know, monetary support, like an indication that you're like a visible indication is fine. By the way, on YouTube, if you're a member of the Damage Report, you get a badge next to your name. There's nothing wrong with that. But the badge doesn't imply that you're better than everyone else. How many times do I constantly say that while I appreciate everyone who monetarily supports the network or the Damage Report specifically, that's not the difference between whether you're a part of the community or not. You're just as much of the part of the community, whether you've never sent a super chat, never been a member, any of that stuff. This is designed explicitly to convince people that you're only a part of the good group if you pay the richest man in the world $8 a month. And I can't think of anything more ridiculous than that.
Well, I really fast, I think two things are being conflated here, and I think it's being insidiously done by the right wing, and kind of Elon Musk is falling for it as usual, which is there's two ideas behind verification. Is this real people versus we care about the real people being verified as being celebrities, people with platforms, because if they are verified and they say certain things, it could potentially be more influential. Even on YouTube, you can be whatever size creator, just go through some steps and verify yourself. And I think that's a good feature that all social media platforms should have. Like, I am a real person, not a bot or a tool, and bots verify themselves on Twitter. And like bots note themselves as bots. That's totally fine to do. But what Elon Musk is doing is saying, okay, let's make everyone verified so we can all have people impersonate accounts, but just say parody behind them and cause chaos and havoc as long as they have $8 a month. Ridiculous.
Yeah, and honestly, look, I don't like them being tied together, even if it was real verification. But at least if it did actually require verification, there would be a case to be made. It's the stripping away of the safety part while having the mark there, which is going to fool people into thinking they can trust these accounts when they can't. And especially under the guise of supposedly being against spam and scam, when literally every crypto person is gonna buy 50 of these as part of an investment to make their NFT seem legit. His idea that nobody is going to be willing to pay $8 as part of scam makes no sense whatsoever. The bot networks are already bought. This is just going to slightly increase the cost of the bot network. It's just like, anyway, I want to turn to another aspect of this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we've got a lot to get to. Don't worry about that. Anyway, we had heard that comedy is now legal on Twitter once Elon Musk took over, but apparently one form of comedy still is illegal, I guess. Now he tweeted just yesterday, going forward, any Twitter handles engaging in impersonation without clearly specifying parody will be permanently suspended. Any name change at all will cause temporary loss of verified checkmark, although I'll point out again that the checkmark doesn't mean that you're verified. They're not gonna be requiring that. But why all of a sudden this massive change in their policies? Well, maybe it's because, as Ken Klippenstein points out, there were accounts saying things like, my wife left me while pretending, kind of, to be Elon Musk. Now, the fact that it said in parentheses real was maybe an indication that this is a parody, but that account was destroyed. You've got Jeff Jacques saying, as if they were Elon Musk, Grimes never said I had a weird dick and smelled like nachos, and if he reposes, you'll be arrested. They were suspended. Kathy Griffin got suspended. Even Sarah Silverman got suspended for the crime of pretending to be Elon Musk while saying, I am a freedom of speech absolutist and I eat duty for breakfast every day. Her account was locked. So I guess comedy is legal if the great ruler of Twitter is okay with it. Maybe if it's mocking people he doesn't like rather than mocking him. Do you start to get an idea of why having an incredibly thin-skinned billionaire as the owner of a social media platform might not be the best thing?
It's also an incredibly short-sighted billionaire, because everyone was saying, okay, if you give everyone with $8 a month the ability to verify themselves, and you're going to have rampant misuse of verification. The verification means so many different things on so many different social media platforms. This is stuff that has been taught in schools to kids to make sure they can figure out news literacy. And now Elon Musk is breaking that thing. So it's going to cause irreparable issues to a country and a social media platform that misinformation is already running rampant in. And of course, he doesn't really care, because to him, this is a $44 billion vanity project.
Exactly. Yeah, look, you honestly, should you have policies to stop impersonation? Yes, I would argue they did. It was verification, which you decided to destroy, Elon Musk. So what do you know? Your knee-jerk thing that you decided to do to make right-wing trolls happy and generate some money, hey, what do you know? There was actually a more important purpose behind that that you either didn't or couldn't understand, and that's having ripple effects that are making this more complicated. Do you see how when we were saying initially that this is fundamentally not a set of problems that you can fix with engineering, that is true. This is a social media company. It's not just a battery or an engine. Most of the problems that are facing Twitter are not things that more engineers could fix. And even if they were, he fired half the engineers. So he is not, like, going into this process, he's not psychologically or emotionally ready to deal with these problems. He doesn't understand the basic nature of the company that he has purchased. Thanks in no small part to Dan Evans, I came across one of the saddest things that I've ever seen on the internet. It's a post from the Elon Musk subreddit saying, is there a counter meme to the weird nerd taking bullet for Elon Simpsons meme? As the title says, wondering if anyone knows of a good counter to that meme? Something that turns the table and shows the poster as an FU deer or something like that. That's fear, uncertainty,
fudder.
Doubt. It's a fudder, but it's a cryptocurrency thing. It's anybody who tries to come in and get through the ridiculous bubble we've put ourselves in and introduce facts to the conversation, we don't like that and we don't want it. Anyway, if you're not familiar with this meme, totally not a cult. That's the meme that they're talking about. And you'll often see that posted online when someone points out an indisputable and valid criticism of Elon Musk, they feel the need to jump in front of it for him. Thinking, I don't know, either just honestly worshiping him, or more likely believing that he'll reply to them or make them a millionaire. I don't know what the thinking is, but it's really pathetic. And they want a reply to it. Dan, when I first saw that, I just thought, there's gotta be a better way. There's gotta be a hobby or a different community. Why are you, they're already on a subreddit dedicated to Elon Musk, which is already so sad. They found a way to make it sadder.
Oh, I'm definitely making content about this as we speak. But when I posted that one famous, how long till Elon Musk gets the guillotine, like infamous tweet that he actually responded to, I had people in my replies for days who were, you know, some of the darker things that were almost threatening, but if anything, we're more revealing about the state of these people who are like, how dare you threaten someone who is changing the world? I would give my life to Elon Musk. Like, that's a literal screenshot I have that someone said. Other things are like, if it wasn't for Musk, I would unalive myself, like things like that. Like, it's actually speaks to a state of depression that a lot of people maybe have taken their hopelessness in the world, and instead of trying to figure out how they can improve that through either electoral politics or outside the political system, as maybe some of the viewers of the show might, they just go, let's hope this rich billionaire who seems really cool just does all the things and like changes the world for us, because I'm throwing my hands up and giving up everything. It's a sad state of affairs, these people, but like, they won't just let the idea that they're wrong like sit in. They're like, hey, does anyone have a counter to this thing that's actually causing me to experience FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt over my cult-like fascination with Elon Musk? Can someone help me it's actually a sad thing. I want to like reach out to that person like in real life and sit down with them and go like, where has society materially failed you? And I want to turn them into a Marxist, because I think exactly. I can fix him.
I know. Well, you'd like to think, but it's just these people just they like this feeling. They think, like with Trump, Elon Musk is hurting or plans to hurt the people that I don't like, and so he's got to be awesome. But he's not awesome. He's just not. Like, buying Twitter for like $20 billion more than it's worth is not an amazing business deal. Calling someone who's trying to save those kids in a cave pedo guy is not awesome. He's not actually, like, can you say I like Tesla cars and I want the right wing to be benefited on social media, but he's also cringy and try hard and needy? Can you just admit that? Why does everything have to be perfect? Why can't people hold like multiple thoughts in their head at the same time? Well, anyway, this is about how pathetic they are, but I want to turn to substantively why it's important whether Elon Musk owns this or not. The day before the midterm elections, the richest man on the world, who just decided to buy one of the most important for politics and new social media companies in the world, Twitter, decided to tweet, and I understand we don't have this, to independent-minded voters, shared power curbs the worst excesses of both parties. Therefore, I recommend voting for a Republican Congress, given that the presidency is Democratic. Now, that's couched in lies about this being about balancing power rather than him just wanting conservatives in power. And bet every cent you have that in 2024, if he's successful and the Republicans control the Congress, he will still find some way to endorse a Republican having unified control over all branches of government. But that is the richest man in the world on the social media site that he just bought, telling its user base to vote for Republicans, despite spending the last year and a half saying that Twitter will only be a success if it's politically neutral. Suddenly, the neutrality is gone. People are voting right now, okay? Early voting, sending in their ballots, and tomorrow they will be at the ballot box, and they were just told by this rich a-hole that they should vote for Republicans, which is, Dan, we should admit, his right. He can do this. But the idea that Twitter is going to be a nonpartisan neutral public square is a ridiculous idea. It always was. And he's proving in the lead up to the midterms how little he actually cared about that.
Oh, aren't you glad you have me on this episode? Because I have brain rot. And so I can tell you that another tweet that you unfortunately don't have from the 15th of June of this year, when Elon Musk was talking about buying Twitter. So again, this is pointing to what you're saying about his influence. He was saying that in Texas, he voted for congressional candidate Mayor Flores in the Texas's 34th congressional district, the QAnon congresswoman who was running. He said, first time I ever voted for Mayor Flores, or first time I ever voted Republican, massive red wave in 2022. So he's literally just no different than like a Joe Rogan reactionary who just moved to Texas from California because he decided he likes steak and like wants to vote Republican down ballot now because he feels like that enhances his manliness or something like that. When in reality, he's does an engineer, supposed rational person like these people idolize, would not look at a QAnon person and go, yeah, this is my person. Yep, no matter what's going on politically, I care much more about cancel culture and Dr. Seuss books and QAnon conspiracy theories than I care about climate change or the environment or going to space or any of the other aspirational things they supposedly care about. Yeah. It shows how ridiculous they are. It shows how politically stupid they are, actually. And I have no problem saying that until I get banned off Twitter.com.
Exactly. Well, look, I want to go to just one more thing before we move on, because it is one thing to have, you know, an obvious partisan actor using this platform to advantage one side. But I want you to start to think about going forward in terms of the actual technical changes he'll make to Twitter, how that will affect everything. So let's jump into one more topic. Elon Musk has promised that he's going to make Twitter better to use, have less spam, and make it more fair and neutral. Now, of course, he's been responding nonstop to right-wing grifters and con artists this entire time, calling into question which side he actually is most interested in. Neutrality doesn't really seem to be it when you're responding to these people. But understand that the right-wing concern about Twitter has always been that they're not fair enough to right-wingers, that they shadow ban them. Now, bear in mind that research projects have shown that the algorithm of Twitter advantages right-wingers, not just in America, but in countries around the world, more so than it does the left. But they have had a problem with the idea of shadow banning, even if they could never prove that it was actually happening. It is apparently coming now. Take a look at this.
But if we can get enough verified users, and we're going to prioritize Twitter search, replies, mentions by verified users first. If your payment verified with a blue checkmark, then you'll be prioritized. And hateful conduct pays, but if somebody risks losing even $8, the net effect will be over time that the verified users will pretty much always be at the top of comments and search, and you won't really see, you'll have to scroll far to see the unverified users, which will be the bots and trolls and whatnot.
Okay, so that was incredibly clear. They are going to be shadow banning people who don't pay them. Okay, they'll say it as the people who pay us are advantaged. But if you don't pay, your replies, your tweets will be pushed down by the algorithm. Okay, so they've been saying they don't like shadow banning. They're introducing shadow banning. They're going to extort money out of you, or else your replies and comments and all of that will not be seen by the people you want to see it. It took less than 2 weeks to move from comedy is legal, everything's gonna be neutral, we're down with the shadow banning, to reversing on literally every part of that, Dan.
Yeah, I don't think conservatives realize this yet, because this was predicted by a lot of folks that he is going to have to go back on many of the promises that he made by in buying Twitter, that he was going to get rid of shadow banning, that he was going to get rid of bots, he was going to expose some of the things that are being done on all these platforms. But yeah, he's gonna have to go back on all these things, because he's gonna have to run a business that advertisers want to be on. I mean, yet another thing he tweeted was saying that back in the day, this is how news used to be carried or whatever, and it was like a soldier carrying birds in the background. That was actually referencing a like Nazi imagery or something like that. Like, eventually Elon Musk is gonna have to realize, advertisers may not want to advertise and spend money on a website where the CEO is tweeting Nazi imagery at random. Like, you know, it's just a surprise. Like, you may not know this, but you may wake up and realize that you, chief marketing officer at Pepsi, is advertising on the Nazi website run by yet another American Nazi adjacent car lover, which we tend to be doing a lot of in this country. But, you know, shout out Henry Ford.
Yeah, no, and I agree. I think that the idea that right wingers have of what Twitter will become is untenable monetarily. But understand, there is a sort of middle ground where they don't allow you to literally just spam the N-word in all caps, but they manipulate the algorithm to benefit right-wingers even more. They introduce this shadow banning, creating a literal class system for social media. There are all sorts of bad things they can do that subvert the idea, the spirit of Twitter, while still technically providing enough cover that GM is willing to start advertising on it again. And we're gonna see over the next few months, over the next year or two, exactly what they end up doing there. But does anybody at this point actually think that him taking over will make it better for its actual users? It's already making it more expensive. Just to maintain the status quo where you can tweet a thing and people will see it, you now have to effectively pay Netflix bucks for that. Who's happy about this change? How has this benefited anyone other than the wealthiest man in the world and right-wing propagandists, honestly, at this point? Anyway.
My last thing is that these people have $8. We see how much right-wingers can raise. We see how much these like right-wing libertarians who straight up don't believe in democracy, who are like right-wing adjacent, they have a lot of money. They have a lot more than $8. They can flood this entire website with accounts. It's just a game of when the public realizes that Twitter is not the space it used to be versus how fast this misinformation can spread. Way to go, Elon Musk. You're supercharging fascism in this country.
He's so awesome. Anyway, with that said, we got a lot more news to get to. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Newly released emails as part of a report show that the DHS under Donald Trump attempted to manufacture a panic about Antifa protesters despite knowingly having no evidence that the people they were investigating, demonizing, and in some cases actually locking up were actually members of Antifa. We're gonna show you a picture of this email here. You're probably not gonna be able to make out much of it at this scale, but it basically says, we want you to begin designating the people you round up as Antifa, even though there's no evidence that they are ascribed to like to an Antifa ideology or that Antifa is an organization at all. They just desperately wanted to have it. This report shows that descriptions of orders being handed down to senior leadership instructed them to broadly apply the label violent Antifa anarchists inspired to Portland protesters unless they had intel showing something different. Which, just want to point out, I know that few people watching this are probably intelligence analysts. That is not how this is supposed to work. You can't just declare that everyone in Portland you arrest is a member of Hydra unless there's a compelling alternative explanation. The evidence is supposed to prove who they are. That's the whole point. But it's clear that this was goal-oriented. The Trump organization, the DHS under Trump, liked the idea of this being Antifa. They liked the idea that Antifa was a thing. They were constantly putting their attention and trying to show that there was some sort of centralized financing network for Antifa protesters, even though they could never see any evidence of that. And so look, there are a lot of stuff that happened during those roundups of protesters, especially in Portland, that maybe is more immediate, more important than just how they were categorized. But the complete lack of interest in accuracy in how they were identifying these protesters is really scary. And remember, these same people might be in power once again in just a couple of years. Dan, what do you think?
That's the thing that scares me the most about this, is that they've shown that their willingness to do things the business way, which is their dirty business way of, let's see how we can cook the books. Let's see how we can figure out these numbers here, which goes against, the law, where you're supposed to prove people guilty, but until then they're innocent. Where they have rights, where you can't just say, huh, will be a lot more convenient for me politically as a president to have this narrative out there about people who are being arrested. So let's just paint the narrative like it is, rather than, or paint the narrative like I would prefer it to be, rather than the reality.
Yeah.
Generally, the conservatives are supposed to be against the whole Orwellian 1984, you have one leader who tells everyone how things are, who changes the rules kind of thing. But they literally never will ever mind it if it's someone on their own side, especially if it's Donald Trump.
Yeah, 100%. And let's just point out that I'm sure there were some people that would call themselves Antifa. But it is always the case when Democrats or anyone left of center protests, one of the things that makes it more difficult sometimes for us to achieve our goals is we don't all think the exact same way. We don't all pursue the exact same goals. We don't follow the exact same leaders or organizations. There is actual diversity of thought, so much so that sometimes, again, it makes it difficult for us to accomplish our goals. That isn't good enough for the regime. They want to be able to just point to one like monolithic enemy that they can demonize. And at the same time, can we also acknowledge that it's kind of ridiculous that according to them, everyone who opposes them is anti-fascist. Like, that's the one organizing characteristic. If you don't like me, you're probably against fascism. That's a really interesting tell from the DHS there. Anyway, with that said, I want to close off this first hour with maybe a little bit of fun. We're going to have just a couple more opportunities before the midterms to make fun of Herschel Walker. So let's enjoy it while we can. Starting with this.
Join me now in welcoming your next U.S. Senator, Herschel Walker.
Okay, so look, you could make the case that it isn't actually any more embarrassing for Tulsi Gabbard to endorse Herschel Walker as a senator than it was when she was endorsing J.D. Vance or Carrie Lake or Don Baldick or any of the other anti-choice fascists that she's thrown her whatever lingering remaining political capital she has behind. But I think it's more embarrassing. Herschel Walker is the China gave us their bad air guy. She knows that he's lied about being an FBI agent and a hospital administrator. She knows, perhaps most importantly, that despite her still claiming to be pro-choice, still claiming to support abortion access and those rights, that this is just the latest extreme hard anti-choice candidate she's backing up. By the way, he supports no exceptions whatsoever when it comes to abortion. He believes that the mom should literally die if that's what it takes. And she's there supporting him as a senator, this utter buffoon. Dan, what do you think?
This Walker campaign can't be over soon enough. Like everything that it just seems like they will do nothing. They'll stop at nothing to embarrass him, essentially. They'll stop at nothing to just admit that he is just a puppet for us to make the votes we want him to make. And so just let him be in there. I like that there's a pastor who noted recently the racial undertones and all of that, that we can just have our boy, so to speak, do what we want to in the Senate. But yeah, it's the entire campaign from top to bottom has felt exploitative. I think the fact that they did literally zero vetting when it came to Herschel Walker, as it's now proven with the not one, not two, not three, not four, not five illegitimate children or like children out of wedlock or paid for abortions that he had. It's just very clear that this was a cynical pick, one of many cynical picks the Republican Party has done in this election and in many other elections in the past and will continue to in the future. Yeah. Hopefully it just doesn't work out this time.
Hopefully, we'll be turning to our picks, our predictions in just a little bit. But I want to remind you of who it is that she is endorsing right there. Here is Herschel Walker, who, as she says, could well be the next senator. Go to it.
Why are they not talking about things that really matter? Why are they not talking about things that really matter? Because they don't have a solution for those things. And I said, I do have a solution, but I'm not going to tell them, because you tell them, they'll think they came up with it. They're good at their marketing. They are good at marketing. What they are good at is lying to you.
That's Herschel Walker saying that. No, he does understand these problems and he has solutions, but you don't get to know what they are. That is literally a joke that they told on The Office when they were trying to replace Michael Scott. They had a candidate who wouldn't tell you what his plan was because it was supposed to be obvious to the audience that you couldn't trust a person like that. And yet that just goes way over the head of that entire crowd who notably did not walk out after being told by the candidate that he would not tell them what his plans were, perhaps because he doesn't actually have any. Anyway, we got more from Herschel Walker, but there's no time. We'll have to wait and see tomorrow if he ends up becoming a senator. For now though, thank you to everyone who's been watching on the linear platforms and on the podcast. As always, thank you so much. But if you're watching the full show, we're going to be back with the aftermath in just a few minutes. And we've got some insane stories to talk about. But then we will be giving you our final political predictions for the midterm. So don't go anywhere. Dan and I will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.